Maybe I could share a couple of nuggets to think about. Nuggets that you could think about more as well. Ilu hosei HaKadosh Baruch Hu zavaseinu Mitzrayim. Harianu banenu v'nei banenu mishubad mayim l'par Mitzrayim. Right, we get started with Magid, as we were saying the other day. Right after the first coast, start with Kiddush, because you always start with Kiddush, and also this is the first, the beginning of the framework of Sipras Yetzias Mitzrayim, with the first of the Kosos. And then we would love to nothing better than to get straight to Matzah, not only because we're hungry, but halachically speaking, Kiddush Makom Suda. But we need to have Magid first. In order to have Magid, as we said the other day, right, both Matzah is only going to be lechem oni once you have already have the magid, and the magid requires that the matzah is still on the table. So we're going to have magid before matzah. In order to have magid, so we need to set ourselves up for all those six, seven elements, the sheila, tshuva, and so on and so forth. So right away we want to encourage sheila and tshuva. So we wash, but then everything goes awry. Right, it looks as though it's a normal meal, but instead of having wash, what you usually do, kiddush wash, hamotzi, so kiddush wash and then vegetables, and then we take out the matzah, but the matzah gets mostly hidden away. Again, both because that makes a lechemoni, and also that's a really strange thing to do. And then we start clearing off the table. In the days of Chazal, they would actually move the tables away. Probably tells us to say, we have a single dining room table. We don't have the little personal table, so we can't move the tables away. But we do the equivalent, which is, you take the matzah off, you take the kara off, as though we're clearing the table, getting ready for benching. Then we actually pour the second kos, as though we're ready to bench. And if kids were not did not already practice the Seder in school, they might naturally say, what on earth are you doing? It's like a fake out. You make kiddush, and we washed, and then all of a sudden everything like exploded. Like, did I fall asleep for the meal? I don't know. We wash kiddush, we wash, and then there was like some celery, and then we're benching. Huh? Like, well, isn't there, we missing like the middle of the meal? Manishtana. So ideally, you would encourage some questions, and then, right, and then we're rolling. So then we have, once we have some questions on the table, we're ready to begin Sipras Yetzias Mitzrayim. So the beginning of the Sipras Yetzias Mitzrayim in response to the Shaila is Masel Begnus Mesayim B'Shevach. We lay out that there was dramatic contrast. There was a lot of change. This was process, and we were used to be there, and now we're here. And so, and we say that twice. We say first Avadim Hayinu, the political shift from Avadim to Bnei Chorin, and before we get to the other version, the Tchilo Ovdei Zarah Hayavoseinu, the spiritual shift from Ovdei Zarah to Kervana Makom Avadah. So after which we're going to have the rest of Magid, we're going to have the Holech V'Doresh of Rami Ovedavi and the Pesach Matzah Mara and so forth. Before in between those, before we do the Tchilo, we chazer over all the instructions, right? When to do it, and with whom to do it, and how to do it. And the very first thing we say there, after we say Avanu Hayinu V'Yotzeinu, is just understand this is really significant. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu would not have taken us out of Mitzrayim, Mishubad Mahayu L'Par Mitzrayim. I remember as a kid being sort of bothered by that. Like, really? I don't understand. Like, we would still be in Egypt? Like, Egypt's a shtickle gone. I mean, Egypt is there, but the Egyptian Empire has long ceased, as Mark Twain put it, and many other historians throughout the ages have noted. The Egyptian Empire is not what it once was. So they're no longer building pyramids or sphinxes. So we would not be Meshubadim L'Parv Mitzrayim. As a kid, I was very literal. Like most kids go through a literal phase. I went through a very literalist phase. And like, we'd still be in Mitzrayim. Like maybe Babel would have taken over from Mitzrayim. Like we'd be somewhere else. Okay, but you get the point as you get older. No, I mean, we wouldn't be us. Maybe that's what it means. We would never become uniquely Jewish. We've been part of Egyptian culture, and maybe would have drifted as Egypt had declined. So we would have drifted to Babylonian culture, to Greek culture, and so on and so forth. We would never become us. We'd never become uniquely Jewish. We've never gotten a connection to Torah. And that's already bridging us from Avadim Hayinu to Mitzrayim. Chaim Freelander, the end of the second volume of Sifsei Chaim Moedim, he has a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful svarim. Highly recommended. Beautiful, three gorgeous volumes of a very substantive, useful, makoros based, and very creative machshava on the Yom Tovim. The three volumes of Sifsei Chaim Moedim. Very, very highly recommended. So at the end of, and it goes in chronological order. The first volume is Tishrei, and the second volume is, I think, starts with Chanukah and runs through Pesach. And then the third volume picks up with Shavuos and takes you through Chodesh Av, and then ends with Shabbos. The end of the second volume, they have the Urei Haggadah from Chaim Freelander. Chaim Freelander was, the Sifsei Chaim is, Torah of Chaim Freelander, he was Mashkiach and Panovish for many, many years before choosing. Mashkiach in Yeshivat HaDarom, Yeshivat HaNegev, excuse me. And he was one of the three primary Talmidim of Dessler. One of the three crafters, I believe, of the Michta Meliyahu. Or three editors of Michta Meliyahu. See, he suggests, maybe Meshubadim Hayinu means, maybe it doesn't mean we've been enslaved. We would no longer be enslaved to the Egyptian Empire. The Egyptian Empire has long since lost all of its slaves, Jewish or otherwise. But maybe it means we would be meshubad in the sense of we would be indebted to Paro. He suggests that may answer two other questions that we often tend to, we might ask as kids, and then the sort of question that we get embarrassed to ask when we're older, or we lose our sense of wonder and open-minded thinking. And we stop asking good questions as we get older sometimes, unfortunately. It's like, what's with the Derech Shlosh Yamin? What's it all about? What? Why do we tell Paro that it's only been 3 days? Akedekach, that the Rashi quotes, in B'Shalach, I believe, from Midrashei Chazal, that Paro seemed to have still assumed that that was the case. In Rashi quotes that they Paro had sent embedded spies in among the Jews as they left, and after 3 days, when they see they're not coming back, so they come back and tell Paro, and that's what induces Paro to take his gather his army, remaining army, and chase after them to the Yamsa. Well, let me just say straight. So some suggest the reason why I didn't say it straight is then it would have been too much to ask of Paro. Where's Bechir Chashus? But still, to the very end, even though they're leaving, Paro still thinks it's Shlosh Yamim. Why? Here's another question. Why are we fooling the Mitzrim with Bayashilu? If we're promised, tell them we want, well, give us. Why lend us? It doesn't seem honest. Why are we telling Paro we're just going temporarily? Why are we telling the Mitzrim we just need your stuff to make it temporarily? I guess it goes together. He said, we'll be back. We need your stuff to take with us and we'll be back. So he suggests that maybe it all comes from the same place. That it was critically important that we not feel a sense of indebtedness. We shouldn't feel that we owe anything to Paro. Paro did it for us. He suggests for two reasons. This is number one, he says if we feel that Paro let us free, it was clear to the Jews that Paro wasn't letting them free. He didn't even think he was setting them free. He thought he was just giving them a 3-day religious leave. If we would have had the feeling that Paro freed us, and we would feel indebted to Paro, and Rukhai Freeland suggests there are two negative aspects of that. Number one is when you feel indebted to Paro, we're much more vulnerable to being culturally impacted by Paro. We're much more vulnerable to taking more of Paro's culture with us as we leave the tribe. We feel indebted to the surrounding culture. So number two, is that the whole theological, besides one is the practical point, in terms of being able to withstand the cultural temptations and the hashpa, if you don't feel indebted, it's a lot easier. If I feel like someone's really helping me out and giving me pretty much on my feet, it's harder to feel culturally, socially, mentally independent. He says number two is one of the major Yisodos HaAmuna that was demonstrated and taught at the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim is that Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. Hashem Echad means that He is the sole power. And everything else that happens because of
the fact that that the world normally works according to a certain seder, a certain rhythm, principles of mathematics and physics and chemistry, that's because that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to be. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu usually gloves his hand. HaKadosh Baruch Hu usually makes himself inobvious, because that's the way he designed Olam HaZeh. That he should be inobvious. And part of our work in this world is to discover HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's part of the goal. He's not usually out there. Yitzias Mitzrayim was a rare moment. Yitzias Mitzrayim, Yitzias Mitzrayim, PSM, so Mata and Torah, who have a rare moment of Gilui HaYichud, right? Especially Leil HaSeder. That's what we stressed later on in Magid. Anivu Amach, Anivu Asarf, Anivu Ashaliyah. That was what was special about Leil Tesvav Nisan, is that Kadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, pulled the curtain aside. And we could tell that he was actually writing it. So that... That's the second aspect, is for that message to be clear, it was important that we knew it was coming entirely from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's that he suggested, so that's why Mishubad Mayinu L'Parav Mitzrayim. Not, and that's why he's going back to the beginning of the sentence, Ilo Hotzi HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Avoseinu Mitzrayim. It's not that we never would have left. It's that God wouldn't have taken us out. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't have extracted us from Mitzrayim. It would have been a more natural process. Either power just deciding he wants to let us go, or there would be a political level, political and social evolution, and the culture HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have, like the Nesu of Purim, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have stage managed what happened in Mitzrayim over the course of a couple of decades. You know, we're moving towards Mitzrayim is sort of evolving socially, evolving politically, and there's a movement to let go of the slaves. And we would have just left. We would have been allowed to go. It could have happened in lots of different ways, like HaKamas HaMedina, like the Nesu Purim. The Kadosh Baruch Hu chose not to do that because then Meshubad Mayu L'Parav Mitzrayim. Then we would have felt much more indebted to, if we would have left Mitzrayim naturally, we would have felt indebted to Paro as opposed to be able to carve our own identity, and we would have felt indebted to Paro as opposed to be able to recognize that Ein Od Milvado. That's... something important to think about. Meshubadim Hayinu. More in the I'll take questions after this maybe. More in the instruction part of Magid. Even though in principle, if you're writing a seder, it would make sense to really save your fire for Mitchila and on for Arami Ovayavi is really the main telling of the story. But Lemaisa, the people around the table have shorter attention spans, or just have been prepped with a lot of focus on the beginning, because sometimes it's hard to shift focus to the end. It's definitely good to think about Yesodos that come up at the beginning. B'nei Brak, did we talk about B'nei Brak? Well, I mentioned we would talk about B'nei Brak, right? I asked the question yesterday, Shachar, right? What's with B'nei Brak? One of the things we don't really focus on. But those five Zakenim, they're having a Seder together. Ostensibly, that story is there to demonstrate what had just been said. It's a Maisa Rav. It's a Maisa to demonstrate the thing we just mentioned. That don't think you're so smart. I know it already. What do I mean? I'm a Yeshiva Bachar. I know all about Yitzias Mitzrayim. What do I need to be a Seder for? Let's open up a Gemara. What are we wasting time at the Seder for? Says Rabbi Lezer knew something about Yitzias Mitzrayim too. Rabbi Yeshua had learned Shmos Va'era Bo B'Shalcha. He also had been Mavr Sedra a couple times. And he was not booking out early from the Seder. He was there La Mahadran. Mamash until was right time for Shachris. They went all night long. So if they could be fully enthralled and fully engaged, we could certainly, we're not great time Chacham, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Yeshua, there's plenty to work on. Okay. But then you have to ask yourself, why did they B'nei Brak? All places. I say, well, I don't know, why not B'nei Brak? Except that the Gemara Sanhedrin talks about which Tanam were Rabbanim in which cities. Rabbi Akiva was a Rav of B'nei Brak, which means they were all having Seder with Rabbi Akiva. But that's strange because they were Rebbeim of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Shua, Rabbi Akiva is Rebbeim. So, you know, in a family, usually when married children are younger, so they tend to come to the parents, the grandparents, for Pesach. And at a certain point, as the married children get older, and the grandchildren get older, and the parents or grandparents get older, at a certain point, you know, things often will tip around the other way, and it becomes easier on all fronts to have the grandparents come to the parents and children, as opposed to the reverse. But you don't expect, you expect that in a family. You don't expect that with Rebbeim and Talmidim. The Rebbeim came to have Seder by Rebbe Akiva? It seems a little upside down. So, this idea that, that's been close to my heart for a long time, and came across recently, apparently it's in the quoted from the Aruch HaShulchan Haggadah. Someone, you know, Becher has this in his article in Torah, Pesach Torah to go. So he points out this idea is Aruch HaShulchan. Then I want to share with you also approach of the B'nai Yisachar. So we'll have a Lutzvish approach and a Chassidish approach. And we will discover, not surprisingly, that I think they're really coming at the same theme. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, no, they want Dafka to go to Rebbe Akiva because he was their Rebbe. He was their Talmud in many ways, but he was their Rebbe in optimism. There's a Minhag Yisrael, I mean this only somewhat tongue-in-cheek, the Minhag Yisrael that's developed the last, I don't know how many decades or centuries, to chazer over the last Gemara and Makkos on Erev Pesach. Common Minhag Yisrael. You're familiar with this Minhag? No, of course you are. Because Tanis Bukharim, so we do Tanis Bukharim, few Bukharim fast, instead you have Siyubim. The Siyubim in Shul, so even though it's really meant for the Bukharim, but hey, you're in Shul, Erev Pesach, and someone's teaching Torah for minutes, so why not be a Mitzdarim? So everyone listens. What's the most common Siyubim in Erev Pesach morning? Meseches Makos. Right? Lamaisa. So Nizdavu HaDvarim, that is a very common practice. Many, many religious Jews spend a few minutes after Shacharis, Erev Pesach, listening to someone chazer over the last Agadot and Makkos. So, and this is of more significance than you might think. But what is the last Agadot and Makkos? Very, very, very important Agadot, right? They're Rebbe Akiva, not exactly the same group, but almost exactly the same group as around the Seder. Rebbe Gamliel is there, he's not the Seder, but it's more or less the same group of people. They're all walking, they see the Churban and Har HaBayis. Terrible. They see that it's in ruins, and there are animals there. And they see a bit Harvai's in ruins, they tear their clothing. Then they see the foxes walking in and out where the Kodesh HaKadosh used to be. And almost all the time they begin to cry, sob. And Rebbe Akiva is smiling. Mitzachek, I don't think it's Mitzachek. I'm not sure Mitzachek is laughing, but smiling, certainly. Chuckling, smiling. Are you okay? What are you thinking? Smiling? He's such a horrible, right? So we all know the Gemara. What happens? He says to them, oh, why are you so upset? Why are you so upset? Look at Makam Mikdash. He says, exactly. He says, now that we see, we always knew about the Nevuah of Shul and Hilchuba, but now that we actually see, the negative Nevuahs b'mo einayim, we don't have to just imagine what they might look like. We actually see them with our own eyes. It becomes that much easier to be able to imagine, conjure up in our minds the good Nevuahs, which we haven't yet seen come true, coming true. Now that I see that, the negative who are actually coming true, that allows me to more easily imagine the picture in my own mind, the positive view of Zechariah coming true. As an aside, that positive view of Zechariah is one that we can actually, in that sense, we have Rebbe Akiva situation plus. Because I think I might have mentioned that if you know where to go in the Old City, there's one tourist lane in the Jewish quarter. You sort of go to the Rechava, and after Rechava, you go straight down Rechavot Feres Yisrael, past Mizgavodach, down the steps to the Kotel. Right? So most people don't live in the Old City, just sort of follow that straight line down to the Kotel. But there's a big, wide, a lot of width to the Old City. There are many, many, many Jews who actually live in the Old City. I have a brother-in-law who grew up in the Old City, and they're like real houses and like slides and playgrounds and stores, not just stores that sell pizza, like stores that sell like, you know, food. There's a community in the Rova. And if you know where to go, if you're headed towards the coast, at one point you make a right turn, you can get to this big playground, stone playground, that has benches on the side, and engraved right next to that is that pasuk from Zechariah that Rebbe Akiva was dreaming about. Od Yeshua came with Kenneth Bechor with Yerushalayim. But yet come a day where the old Jews will be sitting and relaxing in the streets of Yerushalayim and the little kids will be playing. You could cry tears of joy because you see that Nevuah engraved in the wall and you see old people sitting on the benches. You see little kids running around playing. Mamash, like, how lucky we are. We mamash get to see the Nevuah already beginning to... The positive was come true.
Rabbi Akiva did not have that advantage of a historical advantage. He did not have the situational advantage of seeing the good nevuahs come true, but he was able to look at the negative situation and see within it positive. That was the koach of Rabbi Akiva. He was an unusual optimist. The Rav has a beautiful drasha about this. He talks about Rabbi Akiva was a man who he just kept, who would always, let's try it again and let's see how we can make it better. And Rabbi Akiva built the biggest yeshiva in world history. 24,000 talmidim. Even nowadays, when there are more people learning Torah in a kavua fashion, in a full-time way, than has been the case in who knows how long, all the biggest yeshivas in the world put together are nowhere near 24,000. 24,000. One yeshiva. Amazing. He even fronted he put up a candidate for Mashiach. He thought that Bar Kochba would be Mashiach. Then it all comes to, he was at the Gemara Sanhedrin, it's a whole machlokas, Rabbi Akiva the Chachamim, whether the Nebuah of Yirmiyahu about the 70 years was true for the second Churban as well. He thought that the Mashiach would come around the year 140. The Bar Kochba revolted in 130s, he thought that this was Mashiach. Rabbi writes, when Bar Kochba was killed, then it became clear that he was not Mashiach. Someone dies, and he's clearly not Mashiach. So, but there was a legitimate assumption. There was Machlokas HaTanam. Until he was killed, Machlokas HaTanam, whether he was going to be Mashiach, right? And then what? And then his candidate for Mashiach is gone. The war ends, is bloody Shein Kamoh. If you know your Jewish history, the way the Romans put down the Bar Kochba uprising was far bloodier, even, than what had happened 67 years earlier with the destruction, the sack of Yerushalayim, the destruction of the Second Temple. It was horrific. So there are those who suggest that when the Gemara says that his Talmidim died, that the 24,000 Talmidim died, it may be a veiled reference to, if he believed that Bar Kochba was Mashiach, presumably his Talmidim, he had enormous yeshiva, were presumably the Hezronics in Bar Kochba's army. Bar Kochba's revolt army was wiped out. Not decimated, I haven't tertiated, wiped out by the Romans. That was the end of Rabbi Akiva's career. His yeshiva, his sense of Mashiach. No, and he was an old man. He had turned his whole life around more than once. Right? He had been a Am Haaretz, and then he became a Ben Torah. Then he became one of the greatest Talmid Chachamim of all time. Right? The Gemara wants to describe Moshe Rabbeinu being shown what Torah would look like in the future. The way the Gemara describes that Kadosh Baruch Hu has Moshe Rabbeinu, so to speak, sit in or audit Rabbi Akiva's yeshiva. Right? One of the greatest Talmidim of all time. The biggest yeshiva of all time. A candidate for Mashiach. And then it all falls apart. And he was an old man. And no one would have faulted him for retiring. He's done it all. And he's an old man. He should retire. Retire, move to Lakewood. Whatever. Retire, move to Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim wasn't really an option. Lakewood was not an option. Whatever. No one would have retired. Yeah, no one would have faulted him for retiring. And then you can imagine what the pundits said. I try to imagine for a moment. Like, what were the bloggers, so to speak, saying? There was always blogging. It just wasn't online. There was always, you know, hack. So, of varying degrees of substance. So, what were the bloggers saying in the old days? The man had a yeshiva, enormous. Right? And then it all falls apart. And then he got together a new yeshiva of five guys. Mustama, the cynical blogger, says, "What an also man! Yeah, he's past his prime. Come on, like, nah. If you call that a second trial, like, five time medium, like, darn it, like, never, like, over the hill." You can imagine how the cynics must have looked at Rabbi Akiva. And yet, he had the last laugh. He was interested in laughing, and he had the last laugh in the sense that how many Divrei Torah do we have from the 24,000 Talmidim? How many do you know? None. How many of them can you name? 24,000 Talmidim. How many can you name?
One.
Yeah. Maybe okay. That's good. So we're one down, 23,999 to go. Who are meanwhile, those five Talmidim look like five Talmidim. After 24,000, what's five Talmidim? I think I mentioned the fact, Leo Dordas points out that 80% of named statements in Shisha Sefer Mishnah, 80% of them come from just four people who are all from that second yeshiva, the mayor of Yossi of Shimon Yehuda. So when it looked like it's all over, and what type of second try, he mamish built
our the bulk of our Torah Shabbat is because of Rabbi Akiva's second try. He was the king of optimism. Mamish, the king of optimism. So they came to Rabbi Akiva. Some suggest it was maybe the question also of timing. When did this Seder happen, before the Bar Kokhba revolt or after the Bar Kokhba? After Bar Kokhba revolt, by the way, was the Asarah Rugi Malchus. Most of the Asarah Rugi Malchus, the Hadrianic persecution that followed the Bar Kokhba revolt, that's when they realized that they needed to colonize Judea in a different way, method, than they used for most of their colonies. In order to assimilate Judea, they realized there was an X factor, which was Torah Mitzvahs, which is why after the Bar Kokhba revolt, there's this brutal religious persecution. And that's when people are being killed for doing mitzvahs. That's when the Talmud are working on the sugya of Yar Goyava. And to go nefesh doch and mitzvah, that was Omer al HaPerek. And that's where Rebbe Akiva is killed, and then the Rechayim ben Shaijan is killed. He was killed for teaching Torah Rabbim. That's post Bar Kokhba. So it may have been then that the Talmud were getting that hiding out of Seder. No, she had two Churbanos in a century. This image was destroyed, Bar Kokhba. Like, it was horrific. You have a Seder. You celebrate Pesach. It's Man Chay Rosenu. You see us Mitzrayim. Oh, horrific. And they talk about, like, the in modern times, the people in the Siddharm and the DP camps. The Siddharm in the Holocaust, during the Holocaust. Like, it takes such strength. So they need to figure out where they go. They went to Rebbe Akiva. They said, Rebbe Akiva is the Rebbe. Rebbe Akiva may be our Talmud, but he's the Rebbe of optimism. And after some suggest Alder of Drash, that they went to him and they were misapri tzias Mitzrayim kol oso halayla. Some suggest with the poetic eye and ear that throughout the darkness they'd be misapri tzias Mitzrayim until the Talmidim come and say Rabbi Sein gives my creation shal shachas. They were working and working and working on the sugis of Amuna to the point where they're able to see he gives on creation shal shachar. They're already beginning to be able to see a Kadosh Baruch Hu in our lives, and now the job is done. The Bnei Yisachar has a different twist. Bnei Yisachar says, Rabosai, what happened in Bnei Brak? So Bnei Brak is in Sheva Dan. Dan is where Avodah Zarah, Jewish Avodah Zarah began. In Eretz Israel. Not a first that we're particularly proud of. But the Pesel Micha was in Sheva Dan. So it's the beginning of the first major incursion of Jewish idolatry into Eretz Israel. And yet, it's this Shorosh HaTumah. Yet, the Gemara also tells us, maybe Banam Shal Haman, Lam Du Torah, Bivnei Brak, which has been put to music in various ways, not for now, but maybe Banam Shal Haman, Lam Du Torah, Bivnei Brak. Gemara says, some of Haman's descendants ultimately became Jewish and learned in Torah in Yeshiva Bnei Brak. So Bnei Yisachar says, Mamish, Bnei Brak is an amazing place. It's the same place where the Tumah began can be the place of the turnaround. And Bnei Brak is a symbol of the ability to change. We might say, it's the Shorosh of Avodah Zarah. It's unredeemable. Anything is redeemable. Anyone is redeemable. Even Bnei Brak, even Sheva Dan, which is the source of Tumah, could turn out to be the place where Bnei Haman, Bnei Banav Shal Haman are involved in Limud HaTorah. So, and Bnei Yisachar says, maybe that's why a similar theme, the ability to change, potential for change, the potential that always is for regrowth, it was that ability that they came to Bnei Brak to chaperine the inspiration of being a place where Tumah begins could also be the Shorosh HaTumah, could also be the Shorosh HaKadusha. Often people who at some point in their lives seem like the most challenging are the people who end up being the most effective in many holy ways. I leave you with two final ideas. One that I've heard from my father many times at the Seder, And then one amazing chop that I saw in Rav Druk. In the core of the Seder, in the Arami Ovid Avi, so you have to ask yourself, you may or may not, people at the table may or may not be interested in this, but at least you should be asking yourself, what are those midrashim adding? The Medrash takes a pasuk and then goes line by line, the Kamosh Nemar is supposed to add interpretation, meaning, to
the word. The pasuk in Kisavos says X. I'm not sure what X means. Ah, and look, Kamosha, now I understand what X means. As if you say the pasuk in Kisavos says Yad Chazaka is Rona Tui, etc. That means Esar Makas. Ah, so now I appreciate what Yad Chazaka means. I appreciate what Rona Tui means as an example. But here's a good one. Once you focus on it, you probably said this. I'm sure you said this many times. Focus on it. Vayirei Osona Mitzrim. Right? What does that mean? They were bad to us. Let's be smart. Pen Yirbe. Remember that? Pyro calls his council. He says we better have a plan because otherwise they're going to, if there's war, if we're attacked by a foreign country, it's going to be all over. We have the Jews, their fifth column. It's going to be bad. What was just added? We know that the Mitzrayim were bad to us. Shkoyach. They planned to be bad to us. Well, it's because they planned it. Well, what's being added? So my father often says over, it's profound. It's subtle, but profound. What the was that pasuk say? It's not just that they're planning. What does Paro say to his council? He says, we better do something. We have a Jewish problem that we better solve. The Jews are fundamentally disloyal, Paro says. They're fundamentally disloyal, and they're a risk. If a foreign country attacks us, the Jews will immediately join the other side and will have a revolt from within. So we have a Jewish problem we better solve. There was no evidence that there was a Jewish problem. There was no evidence that the Jews were disloyal. The only evidence there was Yosef, who was anything but disloyal. The man saved the country, saved the society. As we learned weeks ago in Rabbah, was incredibly honest when he had billions of dollars of state funds running through his hands. There was all the evidence in favor of the Jews, no evidence against the Jews. Vayareo Sanu, the Medrash is saying, does not mean they were bad to us. That comes later. Vayanunu means that they tortured us. Vayareo Sanu is Hifil. It's they said that we were bad. So they were meiria us. The Mitzrim designated us as bad people. And that is a phenomenon that has recurred throughout several millennia of anti-Semitism. That often the first stages in development of anti-Semitism, anti-Semitic violence, is there's a scapegoating that goes on. But there's this whole bilbo that we are, the stories are made up that we're slaughtering Christian children, Rahman Aslam, for their blood. Stories are going on that we're disloyal, when that's the opposite is true. We are not. We are the culture that's most anti-drinking blood. The whole thing is a bilbo. Jews have in general been incredibly loyal. And that's not only a historical reality, it's the model that we're being taught as Jews in Tanakh. Yosef, Mordechai, Esther, Daniel, but there's the setup, the prelude to anti-Semitic violence is typically anti-Semitic libeling and anti-Semitic scapegoating. And that's a lot of what's going on in Arami Ovid Avi and CPT at the time is recognizing many patterns that were already, that were sort of being laid at, that happened then, that would recur throughout Jewish history, the way in which anti-Semitism plays out, and the way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu manages it. And the V'hi Sha'amdol Avosein V'lanu is exactly that. And this also is an example of, again, how to read, to actually learn Arami Ovid Avi, to actually think about what's actually being said, and what's actually being taught. That is the backbone. That's the primary axis of Sipri Tzias Mitzrayim. So we spoke about Meshubad Mayino, Reb Chaim Friedlander's approach. We spoke about two approaches to Bnei Brak, the Aruch HaShulchan's approach with the Rav, about Rabbi Akiva, approach to Bnei Sassar, that's about Bnei Brak, the location itself is a place of change and hope, not as buzzwords, but actual hope for real change. And we spoke about Vayarei Osanu, and I'll leave you with, for now, one final vart before we go to the Beis Medrash. Rav Druk, I just got a copy of the Rav Druk Haggadah the other day. Okay, this is Gavalik. He says, the minhag is to wear a kittel, or at least someone wears a kittel Right? Some families, everyone who's all married men wear a kittel. Some families, only the one who's leading the seder leads the kittel. There are some communities that don't wear the kittel at all. But the Taz quotes, it's minhag wearing the kittel. The Taz quotes two reasons for the minhag wearing a kittel. And the strange thing is that they seem like they're opposites. Either it's a beged malchus, they're wearing a regal clothing, it's a way of showing cheres, or the kittel is supposed to remind you of lahazkir lo yom ha-misa. When a Jew passes away, so the Chevra Kadisha prepares a body for a funeral, for burial. And one of the things the Chevra Kadisha does is to dress the mace in simple white clothing. The kittel is reminiscent of a tachrichim. So it's either to a sign of cheres and malchus, or to remember your mortality. Now, either idea works. Both ideas need a little thinking about, especially that second one. But you also have to wonder, it's odd that they seem paradoxical taken together. But how do the two fit together well? So he has two beautiful approaches. Number one, he says, we went to the Museum of Jewish Heritage a couple months ago, worked on the ethical wills. So what's that? The ethical will, again, as we spoke about at the time, it's something that Chazal already commented on. It happens multiple times in Tanakh. Yaakov Avinu, Moshe Rabbeinu, and so on and so forth. A person's about to die, a person of substance is about to die. So you not only do you want to lay out how you want your physical assets to be allocated after you pass away, but you want to leave critical ideas. The next generation, here's what I believe in. Here's what's really important for you to hold on to. You have a sense that now is that you don't want your spiritual legacy to just disappear when you pass away. You want to pass on make sure the most important ideas that your life was about get passed on to the next generation. So he suggests, maybe that's what we mean by Beged Mason. We're not trying to be morbid. We're just trying to get in the zone of reminding ourselves. The Leil HaSeder is the night for, without anything negative happening, Leil HaSeder is the night for passing on a legacy. Leil HaSeder is the night to think about what are the most important ideas that my life is built around. Kadosh Baruch Hu, Am Yisrael, Hashgach HaPratis, Galus, Geula, and to pass on those ideas. And that, he suggested, one approach to Beged Meisim, not the macabre, but Beged Meisim in terms of the sense of focus, what's really important. Then he suggests another thing, which is also intriguing. He says, maybe those two things, mamash, go hand in hand. It's not about that I'm going to die. He says, this is part of Laharos as Atzmo. We're trying to play out the story of C.S. Mitzrayim. We should recognize the fact that we were all on the chopping block. People were dying left and right that night. HaKadosh Baruch was killing Bechorim. And it could have been us too. But HaKadosh Baruch had Rachmanis, he was Poseach, he was Chomel, and HaKadosh Baruch was spared us when all the other Bechorim were being killed. And he suggests another approach, that's why the Schus of the Dama Pesach and the Dama Milah, the HaKadosh Baruch said, even though Am Yisrael was Shatuf in Avodah Zarah, and Chazal talk about, they were so enmeshed in the Avodah Zarah culture, to the point the Gemara says, the Malachim say, why are you saving the Jews and not the Egyptians? That Kriyas Yamsuf. Halalu Avdu Avodah Zarah. We were very, very steeped in Avodah Zarah. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bechazdo pulled us through and got us to Matan Torah and got us to Eretz Yisrael and gave us that chance. Saw potential in us and gave us that chance. So, but we're remembering, we were on the chopping block also. So he says, maybe that's why. You were a Beged Mason. To remember, we could have also died Makas Bechoros. HaKadosh Baruch Hu pulled us through. These are some of the many ideas. You have a few days yet until Pesach. It doesn't make sense to spend some time with Ahgal HaGadam. Rama has this minig of saying part of Magid on Shabbos HaGadol afternoon. The Vilna Gaon was upset about that because he said, what do you mean? We say, Tamalomar Yamahu. Right? Magid doesn't apply beforehand. So, Mustama, the background to the Ramah's minig was not that it's actually a key in the Sefer Yetzirah Mitzrayim, but an opportunity to practice. And just to come to the Seder cold, it's not going to be the same. So you got to prepare yourself in advance. So if you're working all week and you don't get off a few days before Yom Tov, so then Shabbos afternoon, Shabbos like, oh, your last chance to prepare for the Seder. So, but it doesn't have to necessarily be Shabbos afternoon, but definitely makes sense to a serious Ben Torah is going to approach one of the most marvelous nights of the year. You have to come prepared. And come prepared means you have some time. So part of the time you use for HCIHY, how can I help you? And when you have time on your own, so part of it could be learning Masechet Sukkah, and part of it could be Chazrin Hilchas Pesach, and part of it could be sitting with the Haggadah and going through Haggadah at a more relaxed pace than you have during CPC's Shrine itself. To prepare, to look, to learn, to ask questions, to search, and to come to the Yom Tov in a deep, profound, substantive way. I'm glad.